Before I started Twitter in about, I opened my account on March 12th, but that day, a very dear friend of ours committed suicide, and so I did not use my account until right about the beginning of May. So before that, I had begun to write a story, and Twitter took me away from that to a huge degree. So anyway, I have part of this story that I'm going to read, and it's totally first draft, never been edited, just basically a line of events. So anyway, maybe you'll find it interesting, maybe you won't. So here goes. I lived an entire life before social media. In fact, I lived several lives. Many would argue that I've lived more than one person should have and survived. I agree. I'm stupefied that I'm still standing here. The risks I took on a daily basis put me in peril's way more frequently than if I'd simply played in the freeway blindfolded. I was young, attractive, completely traumatized, and consequently fearless as a result of the sum total of my experiences. Age 16 is when I relocated from the bosom of the family abode. I had recently been a victim of rape by a 23-year-old man, and my subsequent behavior was so confusing to my parents that in their well-intentioned naivete, they took me to a psychiatrist for a consultation. The result of which was me being forcibly admitted to a lockdown hospital facility for the mentally ill for over 3 weeks, during which my 16th birthday occurred. At this hospital, I reported my rape to the adult counselors, in quotes, on the staff, giving them names, make and model of car, the street on which the man's mother lived, the name of the man's band, the city where they lived, and so on and so forth. This information was categorically ignored and chucked into the rubbish. Not reported to police, not reported to my parents, and I suppose was assumed by them to be a tale I invented to amuse them at their otherwise tedious jobs. Some other tricks I pulled purely for the amusement of the fully incompetent staff at the hospital include an incident where a high school nemesis was also in the hospital. She kept telling me how suicidal she was. I broke off the mirror of my compact, handed it to her, and said, "Go ahead and do it then, so I don't have to listen to you talk about it anymore." She attempted to cut her wrists 4 hours later. The hospital followed up my behavior with a full ban on glass cosmetic containers and mirrors for the adolescent residents. And people say young women can't make change happen alone. I did it. I also covered the outside handle to my locked room with a super lubricant given to us by a Planned Parenthood speaker who actually put a condom on a banana. And you thought that only happened in movies. The super lube on the door prohibited staff from entering my room for a good 45 minutes, during which they were, of course, screaming for me and my roommate to open the door or else. Or else what? You'll rape me? You'll physically carry me into a teenage prison kicking and screaming? You'll completely let me down when I give you every opportunity to punish the man who ruined my life? Too fucking late, cocksuckers. Stay in the goddamn hall. During my 3 week stay at the teen trauma hostel, I was allowed to write letters. So began my campaign to escape and run away to Seattle with my best friend, Kim. We had an elaborate plan developed in which I would run to her hidden car during the supervised transfer from the cafeteria building back to the sleeping quarters. Unfortunately, for some unknown reason, I was considered a high flight risk and assigned a personal guard. Escape did not come to fruition. I did make it to Seattle, but not quite yet. A severe trauma, followed by physically forced incarceration, followed by the monumental failure of the hospital staff to protect me and report a crime against a child, caused this girl to become quite thick-skinned in quite a short period of time. After I was released from the hospital, I was returned to my 10th grade classes, one of which was formerly taught by Mr. Campbell, who was sentenced to 43 years in prison for having sexual relationships with six of his female students, causing several of them to become pregnant, and posing as their father to obtain abortions. He was my second period biology teacher, as well as the former football coach at my junior high, where I was a cheerleader for 1 year. This link, made stronger in the authorities' eyes by my Christmas card given to Mr. Campbell 1 year, containing one red condom and one green, wishing him a safe holiday season, caused absolute assumption on the parts of my classmates and family members that I had in fact been one of his victims. I was a smartass the moment I erupted from the womb. This is a fact. During my term in Mr. Campbell's class, I would frequently ask him if he was a virgin and if there was any possibility of that situation ceasing on the horizon. Little did I know, I was not one of his victims. I recently convinced the last of my four siblings of that truth, 22 years after the fact. I achieved a D in his class despite being placed in all of the gifted programs available at my schools. Don't you think that if I'd let the man dip his willy in my winky, I'd have at least earned a B+? I would hope so. His victims, some of whom I knew well, went on to appear on The Donahue Show. And my own rape got me zero media coverage. This is a perfect example of how unfair life can be. It did, however, cause me to become extremely promiscuous, dangerously daring, and gave me such a deep sense of despair that I would say or do anything, anytime, to anyone. I was invincible in my own mind. I didn't recognize it as suffering then. When I returned to school that Monday, my second period class was obviously being taught by a substitute teacher, as Mr. Campbell was in prison after attempting suicide in the adult wing of the very hospital I was in at the very same time I was there. I saw him at one point when I was taken to the adult wing for a consultation. He was at an outdoor bench, sitting alone. I didn't know very much about what he'd done at the time, so I waved and said hello. He did not return my greeting, cheeky bastard. During second period, a previous very good friend of mine approached me in the middle of class and said loudly in front of the class, "I heard you slept with Mr. Campbell." This was the end of my high school education. I immediately went to the phone, called Kim, and said, "Come pick me up now." I can't recall why Kim wasn't in school, but judging by the number of days we ditched together, rode around in her silver car, smoked Marlboro Lights and drank coffee at Denny's, it was most likely truancy related. She asked no questions, simply hung up and picked me up. I never returned to that high school except one time, when I went to the parking lot on a rainy night as an adult and sobbed in my car for over an hour. I wasn't given to public displays of weakness. But in private, I fell apart frequently. That's not the end of the story. There's more, but that's all I'm going to read for now. So, yeah. Hope you enjoyed it. So this is Janet saying goodnight to the world of Audio Boo. All two of you that might listen to me. Bye, y'all.